since then has really kind of put it to the forefront, did a lot more research than had been done before, and recognized these associations whereby cows that above a certain level of BHB in their blood or their milk in the first weeks after calving was associated with pretty substantial increases in risk of displaced abomasum, perhaps early lactation culling, depending on the timing, depending on the level, with less milk in early or peak lactation and so on.
Welcome to the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest dairy health research digested for you.
Welcome to another episode of the Dairy Health Black Belt Podcast. I'm Luciano Cacheta, I'm your host today, and I have here the pleasure to have again Dr. Steve LeBlanc talking to us. He has opportunity, we talked to him about mitritis once, and now we're going to talk to him about ketosis today. Also, Dr. LeBlanc has been on the forefront of some of the, with his team and other researchers at Guelph, like being in the forefront of the research on ketosis. So it's a pleasure to have him. It's really close to my heart because that's the disease that I work most. So again, it's a pleasure to have you back, Dr. LeBlanc.
Nice to be back, Luciano. Good to talk with you.
Yeah. So again, like I said, this is a topic that's really close to my heart. That's something that I've been involved in and very, very much these days. And similar to what I talk about mitritis, I look up to your group and the team that you guys have at Guelph and what you're doing. And so it's enlightening. And how did the same question that similar that I had before, like how did the interest in ketosis and hyperketonemia grew within your group?
So the super short history is my colleague Todd Duffield was one of the first to really delve into this topic back in the early to mid 90s. And I mean, it's not that ketosis, you know, contrary to rumor, he didn't invent it. but you know, to be fair, he and the team he was working with at the time and since then has really kind of put it to the forefront, did a lot more research than had been done before, and recognized these associations whereby cows that above a certain level of BHB in their blood or their milk in the first weeks after calving was associated with pretty substantial increases in risk of displaced abomasum, perhaps early lactation culling, depending on the timing, depending on the level, with less milk in early or peak lactation and so on. So I technically wasn't Todd's student, but we were certainly around when I was in grad school and he was early faculty, and the interest passed along. And because it's such a prevalent condition, let's call it, it's, you know, and it, like most things in fresh cows, has a lot of tentacles. It can potentially link to disease, to culling, to repro, to production, and so on. That kind of got me going. And so now it's become, it still is something that, yeah, you know, you'd think we'd had found the bottom of the well, but I don't think we have yet.
I know. And I think we just keep learning more, right? Like, and we, lately that, like, again, like there's some people that'll say like, yeah, Duffield like invented the disease, which is like he just like recognized that was there and that's what it was, right? And there's, so I'm trying to phrase in a way that's won't be too much of a leading question, but like what are the latest, like what have you been working on, like you said, like you thought would be eventually get to the bottom of it, but like we just keep going further and further and learning more. So what are the latest that you have to share with us?
So we've got a few things going on, but one of the projects we have in progress right now, and we'll have just the first tiny little sliver from it at the ADSA meeting this year in a research summary, but and it's actually inspired in part by some of the work you and your team are doing, is, you know, Todd had identified these associations of ketosis with various outcomes and so on. And I think what we're slowly getting smarter or more specific about is, you know, it depends. So, you know, your team showed, well, okay, it depends maybe on the consequences and so on, maybe depend on the timing and also, you know, is the cow doing well milking or not, which totally makes sense. So one of the things we're working on now is we've got now 10 studies, big field studies, multi-herd studies, where we were going out over the years, going all the way back to when I was in grad school, which was a long time ago, but a bunch since. So we've got a database of almost 10,000 cows that have at least two blood samples each and outcomes for disease and repro and milk and so on. And so we're mining that data set to try to understand better some of those conditional associations, some of those it depends. And, you know, obviously the big ones are when. So if a cow is above a BHB of X, let's say 1.2 millimoles, but you know, that's the second thing is, so it depends on when. Broadly speaking, earlier onset is worse than later onset for most outcomes. And then also same thing, how high, you know, because which cut point is associated with which outcome, it depends, and it's different. And we use 1.2 as kind of a shorthand because it's pretty close for lots of things. But if we're talking specifically about milk versus culling versus disease versus future repro, timing matters, level matters, there's lots of it depends. So we're going to get, I hope, a little bit smarter about that.
Yeah, I like your point about the 1.2 cutoff. It is something that I also talk to many people all the time. Like, we use that because it's convenient, right? Like, because if you go even like on the seminal work by Dr. Duffield, like, there's different cutoffs for different outcomes.
But exactly.
Like, go tell someone at the farm, like, this one you use for this and this other number for this, it doesn't work. So it's based on, this association is based on the epidemiological data. And then, like, it's interesting because, like, people perceive, and that's one, and you have seen me speak about this before, is like, they perceive that it's black and white, is good or bad. And even if you look at the paper, it's very clear, this is not what was told. It's like, this is association, and there's cows that do well, that they're above it, and they're cows that don't do well, they're below it. He was never saying, like, it was good or bad. It's just like, that's just the associations.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's it. And we can get, you know, we can have a nice academic debate about, you know, exactly which words and, you know, cause and effect versus association. And, you know, it depends, and it depends on what, and like, that's healthy. Like, you know, that's like, as long as we don't get lost in it, that's what researchers should do in the goal of, like, getting it right, getting it straight, being specific and so on. But to your point, I mean, so that's fine. But practically for the field, you know, you're not going to tell the fresh pen crew, well, you know, it depends if you're more worried about milk or repro, well, both, you know, and whether she's going to get sicker, et cetera, et cetera. Do I need to treat her? Don't I? Am I going to get a benefit? And, you know, so we've got to keep the goal in mind. And yeah, that's where we're going to get, just like with lots of other diseases, we're going to get smarter, shorten the list of cows we need to check, make smarter decisions about who's doing just fine and who isn't doing just fine, informed by the ketosis being one of the puzzle pieces of that question.
WiseNetX turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetX.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Yeah, and it was, this is a good segue because you mentioned treatment. So, like, one question I would like to discuss is, like, so should be herds be testing? And if they're testing, like, who should they treat?
Yeah. So, okay, it's not cheating, maybe. I'm going to zoom out a little bit and say, I think the first thing is maybe a herd level decision, even before the cow level. So My two cents as of June 2025 would be that practically every herd should at least do their own prevalence estimate. Figure out whether they're at a herd that's at 5, 10, 20, 25% of their fresh cows that experience ketosis. Because everybody's got some cows. And if we go from the herd to the individual, there's absolutely, you know, some of those cows that are above X are absolutely fine in the sense that they're not going to benefit from treatment, but some of them would, and that's the million-dollar question. But still, I think it first do the herd level thing, because honestly, if a herd is, you know, if you're testing every or your sample of cows, not less than 30, to get a reasonable prevalence estimate, and you're at, you know, 5 or even 10% of your cows are above, let's say, 1.2 for shorthand, you know, you can also look at, are you satisfied with early lactation milk? Are you satisfied with first service conception? Then, you know, if you're kind of ticking all those boxes, then yeah, you know what? This is probably not the bottleneck for you. It's not the place to spend your next time and money. Maybe that's mastitis, lameness, calves, whatever, but maybe not this. But at least now you're making a decision with your vet, your nutritionist, your advisors based on your own data, not because me or somebody else said this or that in last week's seminar. So then, okay, let's assume that we're testing cows because we've decided that's worth doing. Again, there's an it depends, but you know, at the end of the day, if you ask a dairyman, well, do you care about milk or do you care about repro or do you care about subsequent DAs? Well,
everything.
All of them. You know, I don't really want to choose all of them, and so I think it's based on the available evidence currently. Many herds who are up in that, you know, going from Jess McCart's economic model that's more than 10 years old, but still, I think, stands up. When you're into that cumulative more than 15% of your cows affected, you're at least in a zone where potentially, plausibly, an individual cow test and treat program could have enough paybacks in terms of subsequent disease, early lactation culling, perhaps milk, that it can be a viable thing. And treatment right now, it's drenching once a day with 300 mils of propylene glycol. And we know that's not perfect, but it's today's best available. And, you know, again, more things. There's some cool work coming out of Michigan State that we're about to start a field level project looking at whether inflammation and anti-inflammatory treatments can actually be part of the mix.
Yeah, and then they have like some work on halting lipolysis and that kind of stuff. Super interesting, but it needs to be tested on the field. And I'm glad that, like, I was going to ask you how to treat, and I'm glad that you brought up propylene glycol, best available solution now. I just want to emphasize, and this is like a pet peeve of mine, nobody heard here Dr. LeBlanc talking about dextrose for all cows or dexamethasone or those things. We have been shown that like that doesn't really help. So keep it simple. I know the cows, like, some by the third day, if they're better, they don't like the propylene glycol, but they'll fight it. But that's good. Well, once again, thank you, Dr. LeBlanc, for the wisdom and sharing what you've been working with. Super valuable, very good information for us and for the people listening to the podcast. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good to talk with you.
This concludes our Dairy Health Black Belt podcast today. I'm Luciano Cacheta. The podcast is produced and provided to you by WiseNetics. So if you like it, send us feedback so we can know other topics that we should be discussing, and subscribe to the channel so you have new updates and new podcasts when they come out. Thank you for listening, and I'm Luciano Cacheta, and we'll see you next time.